Tonight, AEW made its debut out on the West Coast in California, and it was a memorable one. This was to AEW what the Raw after WrestleMania used to be to WWE fans, back when that actually meant something. This was their Raw after WrestleMania. That first hour of Dynamite tonight, it was nonstop. It grabbed you by the fucking throat. You wouldn't let go one thing right after the other. Second hour, they kind of loosened the grip a little bit. They let you get a little bit of oxygen through. It wasn't quite, didn't have quite the same energy as that first hour did. But when it was over, I thought tonight's episode of Dynamite will go down as one of the greatest episodes they've ever put together. I don't think they could have asked for a better show than what they got tonight in terms of what they put out there in that building in front of that crowd, their first big California show. Executives in the building from Warner and Discovery. I talked about this the other night. Remember on the podcast and on the stream the other night, I mentioned tonight was a very important night for Tony Khan and AEW because Tony Khan was very excited. Executives from this new merged company. A lot of questions about AEW's future and the future of all these different shows now, shows getting canceled and stuff on the network. You know, AEW, they want to get in good with the executives. Well, the executives were in the house tonight. They were there live to watch this show. Right now, as we speak, I assume they're doing... Actually, no, I think Rampage might be live on Friday. They might not even be taping Rampage right now. But when the show is over tonight, possibly right now as we speak, the executives, the network executives, are throwing AEW a big party. They're throwing AEW a big mixer. Tony Khan has got to be very happy, I think, with the way things turned out tonight. And hopefully he'll make some new friends over at the network since they got rid of his other friend. The other person who used to run TBS and TNT, that guy isn't there anymore. So this was a very important night for AEW. And I thought they knocked it out of the park with what they put on here, which was, like I said, one of the best Dynamite shows that we have ever seen. We had the first appearance of CM Punk as the AEW World Champion. And that is going to be overshadowed, including the announcement about Forbidden Door, which was a pretty big announcement at the beginning of the show tonight. I was wondering, you know, what kind of Forbidden Door cameos might we get tonight? Are we going to see any big names maybe on TV? Are we going to get a big match announced? The answer was yes to all of the above. The answer was yes. And what happened with Punk and what happened with him being challenged by one of the greatest of all time to a match, the main event, I assume, at Forbidden Door next month, is completely overshadowed by what we got with one Maxwell Jacob Friedman. Because all anybody was talking about over the last several days heading into the pay-per-view was MJF. And this whole situation with MJF, who no-showed the fan event the other day, the Fan Fest event, was he going to fly himself home? Was he going to show up at the pay-per-view and put over Wardlow and do the right thing? In the end, he did. Supposedly, there was a meeting held in Vegas with MJF and Tony Khan and executives of AEW, and there are still people who think the whole thing is work. I think what we saw tonight, and look, with MJF, you can never be sure of anything. That's part of what's so great about this guy and what he does, his character, his whole shtick. It's hard sometimes to separate fact from fiction, but what we saw tonight, I believe, was a very real situation that Tony Khan and AEW have wisely decided to turn into a storyline. Tony Khan didn't want to say anything about the situation when he was asked about it the other night at the media scrum. He wouldn't answer any questions about it. He could have stoked the fires a little bit more if this was, you know, one big work and really kind of feed into it, and he didn't do that. And supposedly it was after that this meeting was held with him and MJF. What they did tonight was they decided to blend reality and fantasy together. And what we ended up with was MJF having his own CM Punk pipe bomb moment on this show. Nobody knew what MJF was going to talk about when he came out. He had a live mic in his hand. He even made mention of the fact that tonight was a very big night for Tony Khan. A lot of very important people in the building tonight. It would be a shame if something bad happened. And he went on to cut the promo of a lifetime. And all of that passion in his voice and all the energy in his voice and the anger, I believe a lot of that was rooted in some very real feelings that he has and some very real feelings of frustration that he's been dealing with.
In my eye.
I don't believe this entire thing from start to finish was just one big work. I think MJF had, and probably still has, some very valid gripes as far as his position, maybe what he's paid relative to other people who have been brought into the company. And you look at what he has accomplished. You look at what he has done in his time in AEW. When he came into the company, he was a relative unknown. People knew him from MLW and from Beyond Wrestling. So basically, not a lot of people knew who he was. And he watched people like CM Punk and Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole and Big Show and Mark Henry and all these people come in the months and the years after him, probably being paid a hell of a lot more than whatever he was being paid. And I believe that he was frustrated. Because he is the, I don't want to say the MVP. I mean, they have a lot of very important people on that roster. But if he isn't the MVP, he's up there as one of the top two MVPs of that roster. He has been a very important part of the show. And when you talk about young pillars, you think of MJF. You could talk about Sammy Guevara's and Darby Allin's and Jungle Boys and people like that. You think of MJF. He said it in his promo tonight. He's the kind of person that you can build your company around. So they leaned into all that. And he let it all out in the promo tonight. And he made Tony Khan his target. But more importantly, and we're going to get into the whole thing here in a little bit, but more importantly, what have I been talking about now for a few months? What have I been pitching? What have I been talking about? I've been talking about CM Punk and MJF and the unresolved issues between Punk and MJF, right? Punk got the win at Revolution. And I've been saying, MJF needs to be the one to take that championship from CM Punk at the appropriate time. What we saw tonight was the march to the eventual rematch, the rubber match between CM Punk and MJF, when MJF will become the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. We are going to look back on this promo tonight as the kickoff to what is yet to come. And this was the promo, and this was the segment that will overshadow everything else that happened on this show tonight. But there were other things that happened. Miro is back. Finally. 6 months later, Miro is back in AEW. Nobody misses Miro more than the TNT Championship. If the TNT title could talk, oh, the things it would say. Oh, the things it would say to Miro. Please take me back. And Blood and Guts is coming back. Heard me talk about that as well. Although I think that was a little more predictable. I think we could kind of tell the direction that was going in, but we got the announcement tonight from William Regal. I was waiting. I said, you know, if nothing else, you hire William Regal, you pay him to come in just to make the announcement. You can't say War Games anymore, but goddammit, you could send him out there so he could shout Blood and Guts. And that's what we got on the show tonight. So we have a lot to unwrap here. I do welcome you. This is your AEW Dynamite review here for Wednesday, June 1st. It's June, everybody. That means that summer is right around the corner. It feels like it in here. I'm hot as hell in here right now under these lights, but it is June 1st. I am the Sala Monster. One other very fun thing that we're going to be doing a little bit later on in the stream tonight is the debut finally finished. I told you it was coming. We are going to have the debut of the, in addition to the usual male and female, the tag team version of Be the Booker. I'm ready to take it for a spin for the very first time. So that's coming up a little bit later on. So we open the show tonight. Let's just get right into it here with the opening match, because tonight was the very first appearance on Dynamite by the new AEW World Heavyweight Champion CM Punk, a world champion in wrestling for the first time in nearly a full decade. Been a long time since we've seen championship gold around CM Punk's waist. And shout out to Rocky Road 313, who just became a subscriber here to the channel. Rocky Road, what's going on, man? You make me think of the Goonies when you say that. I think of Sloth. Sloth was a very big fan of Rocky Road. I remember that. I watched that movie probably about 25 times as a kid. But we open with CM Punk coming out. He was tagging with the Ring of Honor tag team champions, FTR, taking on Max Caster and the Gun Club. In his rap on his way to the ring, Caster made a crack about Amber Heard, who lost her defamation suit to Johnny Depp today. I'm sure you were all waiting on the edge of your seat for the verdict in this thing. To the tune of $15 million is what she owes Johnny Depp. And he ended the rap by bashing Bret Hart, which got him instant heel heat in this house, I can tell you that. Max Caster is on my shit list now. And he said, Bret Hart's trash, boys. You're getting served by the Acclaimed and the Ass Boys. Yes, listen, I forgot the opening part. I forgot the opening part of his rap. Listen, his rap sucked. And CM Punk and FTR, I'm sure, were not very happy about that Bret Hart crack. So the Gun Club were going 2-on-1 on Dax. Got control of the match. Billy Gunn was out there. He got involved with a right hand while the referee was distracted. Harwood made a one-man comeback on everybody, but his partners got pulled off the apron before he can make the tag. And that was going into the commercial break. After the break, Punk got the hot tag. He slipped. This is all anybody's going to be talking about here from this opening match. He slipped, did CM Punk. On the rope when he was trying for a springboard into the ring. And you could tell nobody was more pissed off about this than CM Punk. You could just tell he beat himself up over the buckshot stuff. I was watching the media scrum the other night, and you could just tell he even said he's probably going to go back and just beat the hell out of himself for fucking up the buckshot, not once, but twice. For the record, the buckshot lariat, it's not an easy move to do. It's not an easy move to do. We just see, you know, Hangman Page do it all the time, so we just kind of take it for granted. But I don't know why he attempted it in the first place. So I'm sure CM Punk is going to be beating himself up over this as well. So he slipped on that springboard into the ring, and there was also a drop kick at one point. Like 20 seconds later, he threw a drop kick at Colton Gunn, who I think was on the apron. Totally missed. Totally whiffed on the drop kick. This was not CM Punk's best night. He looked very rough. From the moment he missed that springboard, I don't know if he tweaked his leg on the way down or what, but no excuses. He just did not look good in this match. Even JR, you know that things are not going well when you get a bowling shoe ugly reference from Jim Ross. We got a bowling shoe ugly reference from good old JR on commentary, so that tells you everything you need to know about those last few minutes. But Punk connected with the top rope elbow. He called for the GTS. Billy Gunn, though, jumped on the apron to distract him. Austin Gunn rolled up Punk for two, and then Punk picked him up. He powered him up into a powerbomb position, and he powerbombed Austin Gunn into his father, who was still standing on the apron. And Billy Gunn took this terrible-looking delayed bump. It was delayed by like 2 seconds. And then finally, he falls off the apron to the floor. Punk hit the GTS to Austin into the big rig from FTR for the win. Punk may not have looked great here, but the fans loved seeing Punk and FTR together as a trio. This was the greatest Bret Hart fan club in the entire world. Punk has said he wants to go for the trios titles once the trios belts are introduced. Him and FTR, he wants to go for the trios belts. After the match was over, Punk got on the mic, and he said that he's never done drugs in his life. I thought he was going to say, but he's going to make an exception tonight so that he doesn't have to think about the botch in the match. But he said that he imagines this reaction that he was getting here from the fans at the Forum in Inglewood. This is what it must be like to be on drugs. That's what he said. And I will say, like, I thought it was a great setting. This was their first time running the Forum. They had a packed house. I don't know if it was totally sold out, but they were pretty close. I think they had about 14,000 in the building tonight. Very similar to what they had in the United Center when, you know, Punk came back and they did the whole first dance thing last summer. And I just thought it made for a great atmosphere, and the crowd was hot all night. So kudos to the crowd out there in California. I thought they did a great job just in terms of, reacting to all the things that you would want them to react to. If you're Tony Khan and you're the wrestlers on the card, you know, the fans, I thought, came out in full force tonight. I thought it made for a much more energetic show. He said that there's still lots to do. He has to keep getting better. He says you can call him a lot of things, but one thing that you must call him is champion. So Dax Harwood took the mic, and he said that his family was in attendance, his wife and his kid. He said that They're the only thing that means more to him than pro wrestling. He said the Ring of Honor tag team titles mean everything. There was a post online saying that it was sold out. It was posted on Twitter. It says Black and Red Ted. All right, well, maybe it was sold out. Last number I saw from WrestleTix, I think there were a few hundred seats left. But the point is, the building was pretty much packed. And you can hear it just from the reaction of the fans. But Dax was putting over the Ring of Honor tag team titles, said they meant everything. And he goes, it doesn't matter if it's somebody from another company, if it's somebody from this company who wants them. And he name-dropped David Finlay, who's going to be wrestling Hangman Page on Dynamite next week. David Finlay from New Japan Pro Wrestling. Ooh! Always spooks me out, that Super Chat from David Hart with the 1999 Super Chat drop. It's that Halloween Super Chat. Thank you, David. Look at this. Papucci in the chat. I love you too, brother. We're already up over 300 likes. That's all. We're not even out of the first match yet. We can do 500. Come on. Come on. We could do that standing on our heads. So then Punk turns his attention to the Forbidden Door. That is, of course, the next AEW pay-per-view coming up June 26th in Chicago at the United Center, where Punk made his comeback last August. And Punk wanted to know who he's got for the show. Come on out. Who do we got? Who's going to be stepping up to face me at Forbidden Door? And all of a sudden, we hear the music. It wasn't the music I was hoping for. It was not the music I was hoping for. I was hoping for the coin flip. We didn't get the coin flip. But what we did get was the next best thing. We got the Ace of New Japan, one of the greatest of all time, former IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, 8 times over, Hiroshi Tanahashi, finally making his AEW debut here on Dynamite, walking out for the very first time. He was out to answer Punk's challenge. He walked out on stage and he posed, you know, and he did the Tanahashi pose. I don't know if we got the air guitar or not, but we got the Tanahashi pose, and he was pointing at Punk while Punk held up the AEW title in the ring. Now, that's one hell of a main event. Punk against Tanahashi. I don't know if it's been made official. I think it has been. But Punk against Tanahashi is the first match made for Forbidden Door. That has to be the main event. That is one hell of a match. Interestingly enough, one of the poses that Tanahashi was doing when he was pantomiming and he was doing all the hand gestures and stuff, he did the motion around his waist that you do when you're going for a championship. And so I wonder if this is going to be for the AEW World title. I had just assumed that these New Japan versus AEW matches, and maybe some of the lesser ones, like a tag team title, could be on the line or something. But in terms of like the world titles, I didn't think that they were going to be defended cross promotion. So we'll see when they make the official announcement, unless they already did on social media when the show was over and I didn't see it. But he was motioning as if maybe the championship was on the line or he was going to go for the championship. That would obviously make it an even bigger match. So Punk and Tanahashi is huge, but it makes me wonder, who are they saving Okada for? And I have two ideas on that. One school of thought goes like this. One natural match that you would want to do is Okada and Omega. That only works if Omega is just swerving us all and they've been lying to us about the extent of his injuries and he's already healed up and he's going to show up next week as a surprise. I don't think that's the case. I do think Kenny Omega is still healing from his most recent hernia surgery. Look, I could be wrong, but I'm going to take him at his word, and Omega is not going to be back in time for Forbidden Door. Omega and Okada would be huge. First time we've seen it in years. I'm thinking if Punk is now taken by Tanahashi, if that is going to be the match, what do you do with Okada? Okada has to be on the show. I'm thinking you do Okada one-on-one with Bryan Danielson. Bryan Danielson has made it very clear Okada is one of those people he wants to wrestle. Okada has said that Bryan Danielson is somebody he wants to get in the ring with. That is a fucking match that you would have told me a few years ago we might be able to get Okada against Bryan Danielson when he was in the middle of his retirement. I would have said you're out of your mind. A, he's retired, and B, he's in WWE, and there ain't no WWE guy going to be going up against Okada. Here we are. Maybe that's the match they do in Chicago. That'd be a hell of a double main event. Punk and Tanahashi, Danielson and Okada. Sign me up. Sounds good to me. But I'm a little surprised that they're going with Punk and Tanahashi and not Punk and Okada, to be honest with you. You know, we've had issues recently with Tanahashi and Moxley. That was kind of my train of thought when I also thought, well, maybe they're going to do a tag match. Maybe they'll do Okada and Tanahashi as a team instead of doing a singles match, and they go up against the Blackpool Combat Club. That could have been an option also. So I was a little surprised by that, but we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see. And look, if Punk is going to defend the AEW title against Tanahashi, then it's only fair that if we get Okada against Danielson, you make that for the IWGP heavyweight title. All right. What's good for one is good for the other. We are officially on the road to the Forbidden Door. I am looking forward to seeing what the rest of the card looks like. Tony Khan has been putting the card together with Ghetto for the last few weeks. They've been putting their heads together, coming up with a card, and we'll see that card develop, obviously, over these next few weeks. So MJF was out next. Before I get to MJF, again, I just want to shout out everybody who is joining here tonight. And we are rapidly approaching 500 likes, which I love to see. So again, hit that thumbs up if you haven't already done so. And I will read all your super chats. I do see them coming on in. So we will get to that a little bit later. But we have MJF. Talk of the town the whole weekend. He made it all about himself, MJF, because all anybody was talking about was that MJF. Well, he walks out here with a live mic in his hand to cut the promo of his young life. Walks to the ring, and he says that he was in a lot of pain after Sunday. 10 power bombs. He took 10 power bombs from Wardlow in that match. But he said tonight he's going to talk to us not as MJF. He's going to talk to us as Max Friedman. So that's when you knew, okay, you could kind of see where this promo was going here. This was going to go in a different direction than we're used to seeing. He mentioned all the Warner Discovery executives in the house tonight and how it'd be a real shame if something bad happened. He said that when AEW started, it was all friends wrestling, but not for him. He wasn't part of that little clique. He had to work his way up. Nobody really knew who he was. He didn't have any friends. He had to do his own thing. And he has. And he says he still gets no respect. Everything he touches, he says, turns to gold. There's nothing he can't do. He says when he comes out every week, he's not expected to hit home runs. He's expected to hit grand slams. And he says that he does that. He says the other wrestlers get to settle for being great, but he has to be perfect. He says he's 26 years old, which I have to keep reminding myself that he's a young guy. He's not in his 30s yet. He's only 26 years old. As good as he is, he's only 26 years old. That's why you have to assume there's going to be a huge bidding war for him if he doesn't, you know, extend his contract early. 18 months from now, he's going to have a lot of money thrown at him. If he's worried now about money, if he's legitimately worried now about what he makes relative to other people on that roster, 18 months from now, he will no longer have to worry. Because he is going to get this. I don't know that I can think of a person who is going to be in as lucky a position as he is. The stars are going to align for this kid. At the beginning of 2024, end of 2023, you've got television deals coming up in WWE. You've got television deals coming up in AEW. I mean, he could not be any more in the driver's seat than he is right now. So I don't know what he has to be so upset about. But I get the sense it's about more than just money. So he says he's only 26 years old, and he's the only guy who's capable of carrying the company on his back, which he said he's been doing now for months. He says, you know, it's funny that I hear clapping in amongst the boos, because it wasn't universal boos for him or anything like that in this promo. It was a mixed reaction. There were boos, there were also a lot of cheers for a lot of the stuff that he was saying. And he goes, it's kind of funny that I hear these cheers mixed in with these boos. He goes, where were all you people when I was being called an unprofessional piece of shit this weekend? Where were all of you? And all the boys in the back, they want my spot. He says, well, they can have it because I don't want to be here anymore. Then he turned his attention to the fans and he called them uneducated marks. He said that the fans don't know shit. Their opinions suck. Well, I can see he's been hanging around on Twitter of late. I can't say I disagree with him. He said fans acted like he sucked in the ring and asked if it's because I don't watch New Japan. Is that why people were saying things like that about me? Is it because I don't dump people on their heads? Is it because I'm not reckless in the ring like certain people? And, you know, it would not, and this is why I go back to the point about blending reality and fantasy. And people can talk about how much of this whole thing was a work and how much of it, you know, is partly a work and they're weaving it into the storyline. That's the camp I fall into. And part of the reason is because the point that he made about how there were a lot of people who said or used to say that, well, you know, MJF, yeah, he can talk and all that, but he's not really good in the ring. That was a consensus thought that you heard from a lot of people for a long time. That's legit. And it wouldn't shock me at all if that bothered him. And this is him incorporating that into his promo and saying, you know, look, motherfuckers, for the longest time I had to hear that, oh, MJF, he's not good in the ring. You know, MJF, he won me over a long time ago. The match he had with Darby at Full Gear, I mean, you want to see a great match, you go back and watch that match. And I think even at the time I said, you give it a few years, MJF and Darby are going to do it again, only they're not going to be in the opening match on a pay-per-view. That's going to be in the main event. MJF, whether it's against Darby, whether it's been against Moxley or other people he's been in the ring with, he has proven that he can work. He can work his ass off. It's not just that he's a good promo and he's okay in the ring, you know, whatever. He can work. And I can guarantee you, on some level, it must have annoyed the shit out of him to hear that criticism. And here he worked it into his promo. Because I'm sure it really did bother him at some point. He said he's the best in the world because he makes people feel. And he said he doesn't do a bunch of bullshit to get the fans there. He called himself a generational talent and says we all take him for granted. But it's not just us, he said. It's not just the fans that take him for granted, he said. It's also the big man in the back. Shout out to Rudy Salas, who just became a Sound Off legend. I salute you. Rudy is now a legend. You're a legend to me. Thank you, Rudy. Because it's the big man in the back as well. He said that he's the biggest minute-by-minute draw this company has, he being MJF, which, by the way, is true. He said, if you don't believe me, ask Statboy Tony. Referring to Tony Khan in the back. Because Tony Khan's a numbers guy. Tony Khan actually owns a statistics company, among all the other things that he's responsible for. He's a numbers guy. He's a numbers geek. And he follows the ratings, and he follows the demos, and the minute-by-minute, and the quarter hours, and all that. And there are many weeks where the MJF segment is the number one thing on the entire show. So he said, go ask that boy Tony. He'll tell you. He said, Tony Khan hoards all the money to bring in all the ex-WWE guys that he keeps bringing in, and the fans cheered that line. He asked the boss if he would treat him better, maybe if he was a former WWE wrestler. MJF said that the problem with Tony Khan is that he has a position of power, and this was a great line. This was a great line. He said the problem with Tony Khan is that he has a position of power in the wrestling business or in this company, when the only position that he should be assuming is behind the guardrail with all the fans. He's calling Tony a mark and saying that he doesn't belong in the back sitting at the gorilla position. He should be sitting in the front row like everybody else. And that's a criticism you hear about Tony Khan all the time, that he is a mark. Because Tony Khan is a fan. He's made no bones about that. Tony Khan used to go to ECW Arena back in the day to watch ECW, and he was a big fan of Ring of Honor. He bought Ring of Honor because he was a fan of Ring of Honor. And in his mind, he thinks that one day he can restore Ring of Honor to what it used to be. If he wasn't a fan, there would have been no reason for him to buy Ring of Honor. So MJF, again, leaning into that perception of Tony Khan. A lot of people are always criticizing Tony and calling him a mark. So, you know, why not lean into it? He said he doesn't want to wait until 2024. And he stared into the, he was leaning up on the top rope, looking down directly into the camera. The camera was right up in his face, and he looks into the camera, and he's taking aim here at Tony Khan. He says, Tony, I want you to fire me. He wants to be fired. And then they bleeped what appeared to be the F word, and I can confirm that's what it was. I have seen the uncensored version of this from the Fight TV feed. He called Tony Khan a fucking mark. And he screamed over and over again, fire me. He wants Tony to fire him. Until finally they cut his mic. He threw the mic down out of anger. And they cut to commercial. This was the pipe bomb moment for MJF. What the pipe bomb was in Las Vegas to CM Punk 11 years ago is what this was to MJF. And I'm not just saying that because they cut his mic off and they cut away just like they did with the Punk segment, although that's part of it. The pipe bomb promo in 2011 was a turning point for CM Punk. Up to that point in the company, Punk, you know, he had been a world heavyweight champion. He had the big gold belt. You know, he was doing the Straight Edge Society stuff and the new Nexus and all that. So it's not like he didn't do anything. But he was never really, even when he was the champion and he had a couple of pay-per-view main events, he was never really positioned as the guy in the company, right? He was always one or two notches below. Then he had, you know, his foot out the door. He was gone. He was leaving. Legit. And he cut that promo and he just didn't give a shit anymore after that. He was going to get the match with Cena and probably do the job and he was going to leave. And he worked out a new arrangement with Vince McMahon because Vince McMahon all of a sudden opened his eyes and said, wait a minute, we got something in this guy. It took him years to figure it out. But that promo opened so many eyes. And it led to the biggest and best run that he had in his entire career. That Money in the Bank match with John Cena is one of the greatest matches in company history. In Chicago, in front of that crowd, it was like fucking magic. I love going back and watching that match. And he won the championship, and you know, again, they rushed him back too quickly. But from that point on, forget the Triple H match. From that point on, it vaulted him into a different level that he had not been at before in that company, right? He was viewed, even though he was still slotted below Cena. I mean, you look at his run in 2012 as champion, he didn't get very many main events, but it vaulted him to that next level. This may end up being that for MJF, especially if the storyline goes in the direction that I think it's going to go in or that it should go in. Obviously, what they're doing here is they're turning a real situation into a storyline. I have to assume that they met, they talked about whatever legitimate issues they had, they worked things out. I mean, we'll find out. I don't know what the product of that supposed meeting was that they were going to have. I don't believe this entire thing was some grand plan they concocted from day one. I do think that he has some legitimate gripes. And evidently, they worked through, for now, whatever it is, and they're going to run with this. Tony Khan is not going to let MJF go anywhere. Tony Khan is not a dumb man. You can say a lot of things about Tony Khan. You may not be a fan of his. You may not even be a fan of AEW. But Tony Khan is not a stupid person. There's no reason that he would allow MJF to walk away with 18 months left on his contract and walk right into the arms of Vince McMahon and Bruce Prichard. If he wants to do that, he'll do that when the time comes and his contract is up. But he would be a fool to allow him to walk into the arms of Vince and Bruce. Especially after what we saw tonight. He's going to be the hottest thing in wrestling that anybody is talking about this week. So it's smart. Blend fantasy and reality and lean into it. To me, those are what make the best promos. Bret Hart, 1997. Talking about how the American wrestling fans, you know, the people turned on him and they're going with Stone Cold, who's anti-authority, and Shawn Michaels posing for girly magazines and piercing his navel and all the stuff that Bret talked about. You know, there was some real emotion there. And he just played into it, and it was great. But you can point to other promos over the years, you know, work shoots and all that. Those are some of the best promos, the ones that are genuine, the ones that work real-life feelings into them. And that's part of what made this work so well, and his delivery. He's very good at what he does. So when MJF really gets into a promo, there are a few people in wrestling right now who are better at it than him. Tony Khan becoming an on-air character. Is that where we're going with this? I hope not. Tony Khan is not Vince McMahon, especially when it comes to being an on-air character. Vince McMahon is the greatest heel of all time. Bar none. Greatest heel in wrestling, period. That Mr. McMahon character. he was just in a completely different stratosphere. He embraced that character, and nobody could play that role other than him. Tony Khan does not have the kind of acting chops to be that. Tony Khan is very awkward, I think, in those situations. I don't think he's really meant to be an on-air character. I don't have any issue with MJF referring to him and talking about him, or if there's going to be a few segments where maybe he'll, you know, run into him in the back or something. But what I don't want to see, and I would hope that Tony is not, you know, going to fall victim to what a lot of other, I think, wrestling promoters and executives end up falling into, which is thinking that everybody wants to see them on television when the answer is no, they do not. A few appearances here and there, I think, is fine. But I hope that we're not headed in a direction where he's going to become a regular on-air character, because I just don't think, I don't think that would be a good idea. I don't know that he can carry it in the way that he would need to. And I don't think he has to. I think MJF can refer to him. People know who Tony Khan is. People mention TK on the show all the time. But I just had to mention that. I hope that's not the direction that we're going. And I said that at the beginning of AEW. I said that I hope Tony Khan doesn't fall into that same trap where we have the authority figure, you know, on TV, and we have to see him on television every week, because I think that would be a mistake. Although, you know, if you give Tony Khan, you know, 5 cups of coffee or some of those 5-hour energies, it actually could be very entertaining to see what. I mean, if you saw the media scrum the other day, now imagine that version of Tony Khan with 5 more cups of coffee in him, and you kind of let him loose on live TV. That might actually be entertaining, but I don't think that would be a good idea. But this is the beginning. This is the beginning. I said this at the beginning of the stream. This is the beginning of the march to the match that I have been pitching to you now for months. MJF against CM Punk for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. And in fact, when they went to commercial, when they cut away from him and they went to commercial, apparently CM Punk came out to kind of come after him or whatever. And MJF bailed into the crowd. He left the building through the crowd. So Punk came out after the segment. I don't think they showed it in a replay when they came back from break, but that to me has to be the direction they're going in. Not right away. I mean, this is months down the road. This is like All Out, Full Gear. I mean, shit, you could stretch this out to Revolution next year. Revolution would be 1 year since their most recent match, if they think they could wait that long. I don't know if they feel, you know, like they can. Maybe it's All Out in Chicago in September, or wherever All Out is going to be. If they're going to be in Chicago, I don't know. But that to me has to be the ultimate direction here. If they want this, if they want to book this almost as their own version, I mentioned the pipe bomb, of Punk and Cena. I think back to Punk and Cena, and there's just so much that more that they could have done with that. And I don't want to relitigate that whole thing here, because it's old news at this point, but I think it's relevant to bring up here, because this might end up being similar. What I would have done, and I understand why they didn't do it, is I would have extended the Punk and Cena stuff even longer, and I would have had Cena ultimately go heel. And I know Vince McMahon was deathly afraid of it. He didn't want to even, you know, entertain the idea of doing that. But ultimately, you would have had Cena as, you know, the nice corporate champion that he is, you know, kind of embracing it and going heel. And there was a period of time in 2012 where Cena was supposed to go heel. And he had new gear made and he had new music made. And then Vince got cold feet and he scrapped the whole idea. That was going to be after WrestleMania. And I get why they didn't do the heel turn or anything like that, because the destination was Cena and Rock at WrestleMania, which was a much bigger match. Punk wasn't even the one they were concerned with. It was all about Rock and Cena. So I get it. I get why they didn't do that. But I think there was so much more potential to do basically what would have ended up being a double turn. And they didn't do it. Well, here, instead of just copying that same exact blueprint, you know, AEW can put a little twist on this. And as time goes on, maybe CM Punk is the one who goes heel. Hangman Page, I mean, the way he was talking about Punk heading into Double or Nothing, you would think that, you know, Punk has some nefarious plan against the company, and that he's really a bad guy. We just haven't seen it yet. Maybe at some point, you know, maybe there is a heel turn for Punk. I just, the idea though of MJF as the babyface, it doesn't feel right to me. But MJF is more of like a tweener type character. Yeah, I think that could definitely work. Look, he got a mixed reaction tonight. I'm not saying that, you know, the babyface version of MJF is going to be coming out kissing babies and smiling all the time like fucking Raquel Rodriguez on SmackDown every week, who looks like she's auditioning for a fucking Crest commercial. But more of kind of a tweener, in-between, straddling the line version of MJF. Yeah, absolutely, I think that could work. Because babyface MJF, it just doesn't, not anytime soon. That just doesn't sound right to me. But, you know, look, we'll see what direction they go in as far as the alignment, heel, face, all that. That almost doesn't even matter. Ultimately, I think MJF takes the title from Punk. I think that's where we get to. And then we can wonder, okay, who takes it from MJF? Do you go back to MJF and Wardlow when one day Wardlow wins the belt? Should Wardlow be the one to beat MJF for the championship? Maybe. But first we have to worry about MJF and his destination, which ultimately should be the AEW world title. The only thing I would say about that is, you know, depending on how things are right now with MJF and Tony Khan, if things are still not great, and Tony suspects that he is going to leave at the end of his contract, do you put the championship on somebody who you have a pretty good idea is not going to stay in your company? The answer would be no. So, you know, whether or not they put the title on him could ultimately depend on that. Does Tony Khan think that MJF is as good as gone at the end of his contract? Because if that's the case, then you don't put the championship on him. But otherwise, that's the direction you go in. We're gonna look back on this promo tonight as the kickoff to this next chapter of his career. This was his big moment. And I think this is what people are going to... This is a promo people are going to be talking about for a very long time. We had Johnny Elite. He was back. This is his second appearance. We saw Johnny Elite, John Morrison, the former John Morrison, make an appearance on Dynamite several weeks ago against Samoa Joe. Well, he was back tonight. And he was back with an open contract. So he was coming out to challenge anybody who would come out and face him, anybody on the AEW roster. And he comes out to the ring, and all of a sudden we see a video up on the big screen, and we see a familiar face pop up in this video. It is Miro. Finally, everybody wondering where Miro has been. Actually, Miro's been filming a TV show for a while. I think he was filming in Brooklyn. Some kind of CBS show. I think it's airing in a few months. But he was hurt for a while before the acting gig. I know he was hurt. He was nursing an injury. It's been 6 months. It's been a while since we've seen Miro. The last time we saw Miro was at Full Gear last November when he lost in the world title eliminator. I think that was the finals, to Bryan Danielson, who ultimately went on to challenge Hangman Page for the championship. That was the last time we saw Miro, and so he was back here. The promo aired on the screen. He talked about being separated from his gold, separated from the TNT title, and he said that his neck is fixed. He said that he told his God that he no longer wanted to return home. He wants to come and take yours. He said that the Redeemer is back, and he came out. And he got a great reaction, too. People were very happy. They were very excited to see Miro. And he basically took the majority of this match. They cut to a picture-in-picture break in here about a minute into the match. Afterwards, Miro continued to dominate. Johnny tried for a Starship Pain, which almost never looks good. Even when he did it in WWE, it looked like it barely connected. I mean, he's flying through the air and all that. I guess that's kind of the appeal of the move, but the landing, he can never really stick the landing. Well, he stuck the landing a little too much here. I think the idea was Miro was supposed to get out of the way. It looked like he clipped Miro with his leg on the way down. Miro was okay. He got up. He had a pump kick, and he locked on his game over submission for the tap out and the win. So a quick, dominant win in about 5 minutes by Miro, and a good half of which was during the break. But Johnny Elite, I don't believe, is officially signed to an AEW contract. I know he wasn't after his last appearance. I still haven't seen the graphic. So until I see the graphic, it don't count. We need the Johnny Elite is all elite. I haven't seen it. So he's not under contract. He's made two appearances so far, two losses. First to Samoa Joe. Right, it was Samoa Joe, I believe, in that first match. And in this match here to Miro. So right now, I don't know what the plan is for him, what Tony Khan is thinking as far as bringing him in per appearance or signing him to a deal. Right now, he is the all-elite enhancement talent, is what Johnny Elite is. But over 6 months later, it's great to have Miro back. You know, the TNT title has not been the same since he dropped it. In fact, the TNT Championship stuff that we've seen on television over the last few months has been consistently some of the worst segments on all of the AEW shows. I don't like it at all. Thankfully, that stuff appears to now be done. And Scorpio Sky is going to be moving on to defending his title against Dante Martin on Rampage this Friday. So hopefully the stuff with Sammy and Ty Conti is finished. It has been horrible. And I would love, now there's plenty of people on the roster for Miro to step into the ring with. Plenty of people have debuted in the last 6 months since we last saw him. I would like to see him ultimately end up back with that TNT title. I think that he could have another run with that championship. I'd like to see him elevated back to that belt. So then we have the Jericho Appreciation Society out next. Chris Jericho. We had Matt Menard. We had Angelo Parker and Jake Hager. Once they got in the ring, Jericho asked for the music to be stopped, which is easy heel heat because people like singing along to the music. He said he knows the fans wanted to sing, but they don't deserve it. And he said that what they deserve are the winners of the Anarchy in the Arena match from the pay-per-view. He talked about the punishment they all took during that match, one of the wildest fucking matches that I've ever seen. I likened it to... I mean, it really was. It was an in-arena version, basically, of Stadium Stampede. But I likened it to the matches that the Nasty Boys had. Those wild brawls they had in WCW with Cactus Jack and Max Payne. There was another one that they had with... oh, God, who was it? Oh, my God, I forgot the other one that they had. But go back and watch some of those matches. That's like 1994. 394 WCW. I mean, those are some of the wildest matches at that time that a lot of people had probably seen. This is before ECW even went extreme. So that's kind of what it reminded me of. It was a lot of fun. I know there were some people who didn't like it. It's the kind of match that you either really love or you really just completely dislike. I thought it was very entertaining. I thought it was a nice pick-me-up at the pay-per-view because there was this lull in the middle. Things were kind of getting boring. It was getting late. The show was too long. And all of a sudden, the music is playing during the match, and these guys are brawling all over the building, and they're, you know, people are bleeding, and they're, you know, Eddie Kingston threw mustard on this guy, and I'm like, all right, this kind of got me back into things here. So I like the match. I think it's something they could probably do once a year if they wanted to. You know, it could be like a new signature match for them. But I understand if people, you know, were not as big of a fan of it. Jericho called Eddie Kingston a psycho, and this was one of the best moments of the entire night. The sight of Eddie Kingston, after all the brawling he did on the concourse and other parts of the building, and he's bloody and he's busted open, that shot of Eddie Kingston walking down the aisle, the ramp, the aisle, whatever it was, shirt torn, all bloody, gas can in his hand, he looked like something out of The Walking Dead. He looked like a fucking zombie. Either a zombie or somebody who had just killed an army of 50 zombies all by himself. What a great shot that was. And he came down to the ring with a gas can because Jericho had burned his face, and so he was going to return the favor and set Jericho on fire. He called Eddie Kingston a psycho. He says, "What kind of man burns another man?" Irony is dead to Chris Jericho. He called Bryan Danielson, who was not on the show tonight, he called him a piece of trash and then pointed out that he and Hager choked him out. He said that Daniel Garcia would take out Jon Moxley tonight in the main event. He said, "Sports entertainers always beat pro wrestlers." Eddie Kingston walked out with William Regal. Unfortunately, Kingston looked more human tonight. He didn't look as cool as he looked the other night. But he came out with Regal, and he wanted Regal to let them know why he wants to fight them. And William Regal took the microphone, and he looked at Chris Jericho and his band of merry men, and he shouted, "Blood and guts." He didn't have the same kind of vigor that he had in him when he would say War Games, but it was close. It was close. I've been waiting for this. I've been waiting for William Regal to say what to say. This is their version, basically, of it, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if Tony Khan gave him a job just for that. He goes, "Look, I got an idea in mind for you. In a few months, I'm going to send you out on TV. You're going to be the one to make the announcement." So, blood and guts. The gauntlet has been laid down. That's all he said, too. He handed the mic back to Eddie. That's all he had to do. Regal came out. He said blood and guts, and he walked to the back. Back through the tunnel he went. Back to Blackpool. And Chris Jericho said that Kingston was not going to get blood and guts. And Eddie came back out. He sent his sidekicks after him. Jericho stayed back. He hung back in the ring. Ortiz enters the ring from behind Jericho. So while Kingston is, dealing with the other guys, here comes Ortiz. Jericho doesn't see him coming up from behind him. And Ortiz hit Jericho with his loaded sock gimmick that they have, Santana and Ortiz. Ortiz pulled out a pair of scissors, and he cut off a lock of Jericho's hair. Just one. Just cut off a little piece of his hair. Jericho got on the mic. He was freaking out. He was squealing that his hair is worth more than both of their entire existence. And Jericho said that if they want blood and guts, they got it. But first, he wants Ortiz against Jericho, one-on-one, hair versus hair. And he said that he would beat Ortiz, he would shave his head, and then he would burn him because he's a wizard. He may be a wizard, but he's not very bright. If Eddie Kingston wanted blood and guts so badly, right? He wanted these guys in a blood and guts match in the worst possible way. Then Jericho could have just had Ortiz put his own hair on the line in a match and say, "Look, if you beat me, you get blood and guts. If I beat you, then I get to shave your head." He didn't have to put his own hair on the line. The guy would have said yes no matter what. He's not too bright. Wizards aren't that smart, apparently. So I'm not quite sure why Jericho did that. I mean, I know why, because that's what Tony Khan booked. But logically, he didn't have to put his hair on the line in this match. But it doesn't matter. We're going to get bald Ortiz. We're not going to get bald Jericho. I think bald Jericho would look fucking terrible. I don't know how that would look. How would Chris Jericho look bald? Probably not very good. It's like Edge. When Edge was going into that match with Kurt Angle back in 2002, I think he said he wouldn't look very good bald. He has a head like an egg. Some people just don't look good like that. I feel like Jericho would be one of those people. So we're probably going to end up getting bald Ortiz. That's coming up on the Road Rager episode of Dynamite. They put a graphic up later in the show, at the very end of the show, that said July 15th. How many of you caught that? July 15th, which would be after 2 weeks after Blood and Guts. It's not July 15th, it's June 15th, 2 weeks from now. They're going to have their match that's Dynamite in Detroit. I'm just happy we're getting Blood and Guts. That's the natural progression. I expected that we were going to get the announcement. I said that I thought it would be on a special episode of Dynamite in early July. We're getting it on June 29th. I was only off by a few days. I figured the reason I said July was they'll wait until after Forbidden Door. And that's what they're doing. They're doing it on the first Dynamite after Forbidden Door. We'll get Blood and Guts. And so I'm sure we'll have more, obviously there's going to be blood. We know that. My only hope is that we don't get some stupid looking Jericho bump again off the top of the cell. That did not look good last time when they pulled that stunt with him and MJF on top of the cage. Hopefully they have enough sense to not do that again. We had a video showing us backstage at Double or Nothing. Samoa Joe was being interviewed after his loss to Adam Cole. He was favoring his injured shoulder. All of a sudden, Jay Lethal came up to him and started fighting with him. Sanjay Dutt, Satnam Singh. They wrapped the chair around Joe's already injured shoulder, and they sent him into this steel apparatus trying to take out Joe. We had a 10-man tag, a very crazy 10-man tag that I did not even begin to... I didn't even begin to try to take notes on all the big spots and all the moves. It's impossible. In a match like this, it's just impossible. The Young Bucks, Red Dragon, and Hikuleo, who is a member of Bullet Club, for those who don't know, currently in New Japan. Big guy, too. Taking on Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, Christian Cage, Darby Allin, and Matt Hardy. Darby standing in for Jeff Hardy. Adam Cole and Jeff Hardy were originally scheduled to be a part of this match. They were pulled, supposedly due to injuries. I don't think Adam Cole is hurt. I think Adam Cole is just fine. Jeff Hardy is the one who is hurt. Jeff Hardy is hurting. Which anybody in their right fucking mind could tell after the match he had with Darby Allin a few weeks ago. Gee, I wonder why Jeff Hardy is in such dire straits. I wonder why Jeff Hardy is all broken down physically and has to pull out of the match on this show. And Darby actually took more punishment than him, and Darby was the one who replaced him in this match. But Darby is made of, like, fucking rubber bands, I think. Jeff Hardy's been doing this a lot longer than Darby Allin has. So the injuries have already been catching up with Jeff for a while now. I'm not surprised that after that match with Darby and then after the match with the Bucks on Sunday, when his boot came loose, and you know, even in that match he was looking very tentative in what he was doing, that Jeff needed the night off. So I think they just decided, you know what, if Jeff's out, we'll take Cole out too, and we'll replace them with other people, and so that's what they did. Lots of insanity in this match. Again, just too much to keep track of. This was just a wild match. We had the Undisputed Elite beating down Christian through a commercial. But a double reverse DDT allowed him to get to the Luchasaurus for a hot tag. Eventually, Hikuleo tagged in for the first time for a face-off with Luchasaurus. So you got the two big bulls going face-to-face in the match. They had their moment. Darby, but also Hikuleo, I have to say this. I looked up. I was taking notes on something, and I looked up just at the moment that the announcers were freaking out. And I see Hikuleo, who is a big guy. Somebody look up his height and punch it into the chat for me. This guy's got to be every bit of 6'8", legit. Like 6'6", 6'8", something like that. He's a big kid. Hikuleo did a dive. I believe it was a dive. Out over the top and landed on his fucking head. And he popped right back up. Even Jim Ross on commentary was surprised that he was able to stand on his own 2 feet. That's a big guy landing on his head. That should never happen. So I did barely catch that as I looked up to see what was going on. But Darby and Kyle O'Reilly tagged in after. They had a great match at the pay-per-view on Sunday. It kind of got lost in the talk of all this MJF stuff and Punk winning the title. You know, and the crazy Jericho match that Darby and Kyle went out there and they had a fucking great wrestling match. Just a great, stiff, kind of knockdown, drag-out kind of match on Sunday. So they tagged into the match. Darby gave coffin splashes to Kyle and to Bobby Fish before hitting the float over stunner. He went for the coffin drop on Hikuleo on the floor, but the big man caught him, and Red Dragon hit the assisted brainbuster on the floor. Austin tells me that it is 6'8". That's what I thought. Yes. 6'8". I told you, he's a big guy. It's Hikuleo. Jim Ross said he's 6'10". Well, then in wrestling speak, he's really 6'8". I'll say that he's 6'8". Whatever they're telling us on TV, you could take 2 or 3 inches off that. So Matt Hardy tagged in, and he was driving everybody's face into the turnbuckles repeatedly over and over again. Hit the twist of fate on Hikuleo, and then Christian took the big man out with a running spear. For the finish, Red Dragon hit the high-low on Christian as the Young Bucks hit the Meltzer driver on Jungle Boy for the win. Indie sanity. That's what this match was. This was a very indie-rific match. And I guess we'll see what that sets the Bucks up for, because the Bucks are not even in the top five. You know, AEW does have rankings. And so if they follow them, the Young Bucks are not even in the top five. FTR is listed at number one. And Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley are listed at number two. And the Bucks are nowhere to be found. So I don't think that we're getting the Bucks in Jurassic Express yet, I don't believe. The bigger question is, who do the Young Bucks face at the Forbidden Door show? I don't know. I haven't really thought about them. But I can't imagine they're not going to want to have a pretty big match on that show. Obviously, they have a lot of history with New Japan, former IWGP champions themselves. So I think the bigger question is what do they have planned for them on that Forbidden Door show? Brandon wants to know, is Sting really hurt? I don't think he is. But they claim that he is. They had to pull him from the meet and greet that he was scheduled for on Saturday, and I think they refunded people's money. They claimed he was hurt. That was coming off of the attack on TV a few weeks ago by Kyle when they wrapped the chair around his ankle. It could have been the cover for a minor injury. You know, he had an injury, and they just used that as an excuse to get him off TV. But I'm not aware of him being legitimately hurt. I just kind of assume they're giving him some time off. You know, which frankly, they and look who just popped up on screen. You guys are unbelievable. It's amazing. Like the things I'm talking about, and then boom, all of a sudden, there's a Sting super chat on my screen. But yeah, I just think it's better if you keep Sting off television a little bit. He's been so overexposed just by putting him out there every week that they should have saved him more than they did. I would never have had Sting on television every week. That was one of my complaints about how they were using him at the very beginning, you know, during the pandemic shows when they first brought him in. Sting is not somebody who I think has to be on TV every week. So if that's the idea that they're taking him off to give him some time away, I think that's fine. Yes, Marcus says, apparently I'm a wizard. I'm going to take Jericho's gimmick. I'm the fucking wizard. I'm more of a wizard than he is, apparently. So Tony Schiavone was on stage to introduce us to the newest member of the AEW women's roster. She made her debut Sunday at Double or Nothing. Athena. I don't know how many of you noticed, though, Tony Schiavone, when he first said her name, introduced her as Athea. I had to go back and listen to it again. He said Athea. So out comes Athea, making her Dynamite debut here on this show. And she was excited to finally say that she is All Elite. She had a big smile on her face, so happy to be there. She called Jade Cargill a dominant champion, said that all streaks are made to be broken, and she will be the one to break Jade's winning streak. So all of a sudden we hear Jade Cargill's voice. She says, Tony, cut the shit. Out she comes with her baddies. She's got Kiera Hogan, and she's got Red Velvet with her. And Stokely Hathaway, the former Malcolm Bivens, who also made his debut on Sunday at Double or Nothing. Hathaway introduced himself as her publicist, so that is how he is being referred to here on this show. He is her, officially, Jade Cargill's publicist. And he said that he knew Athena wanted her title shot. Not today, he said, and Cargill, or not today is what Cargill said, I should say. Kiera Hogan got in Athena's face. Out comes Anna Jay to join in the arguing, and then here comes Chris Statlander, so we didn't have any fists thrown here. It was just another face-off, and that was pretty much the entire segment. Referees came out to keep the ladies apart. So this wasn't really much of a segment. It was nice, though, to have Stokely get a little bit of mic time on TV. I like him. I like him being put with Jade. I was a big fan of his work, you know, when he first got signed, and they didn't do anything with him. I mean, he was signed a long time ago, and it was a while before they actually found a role for him on TV. If you remember, originally they were using him, I think it was with Veer and Shanky, or whatever that team was that they put them together on NXT, and that didn't go anywhere. And then eventually the Diamond Mine thing came about. But I've always been a big fan of him, and I think that him being paired off with Jade Cargill is perfect pairing. I think that's a very good pairing. We see enough of Mark Sterling elsewhere. I've become a fan of Sterling also. I think Mark Sterling is very good in his role, but I don't know that he needed to be with Jade necessarily, so I like the Stokely pairing with them. Back from break, and I've also said this on Sunday, They're talking about Athena wanting the TBS title from Jade Cargill. You get no argument out of me. I mean, if they want to build to that and ultimately, you know, Athena wins the TBS championship, I mean, I can get behind that. But I still believe that Chris Statlander should be the one who ends up with that title. I think that the person who should end Jade's streak should be Chris Statlander. I like the idea of it being a homegrown AEW original talent who the fans genuinely like. She's really good, and the fans are behind her. Even when she walked out tonight, the reaction that she got, very positive. So I'm all about Athena. She's very talented. I think she's going to be a great addition to the women's roster. It's about time. I mean, she's been off television now for months. Statlander, I still believe, is the one who should, you know, unseat Jade when the time is right. So back from break, the camera followed Wardlow through the back. He was coming out for his match here tonight. He was on his way to the ring. No handcuffs. No security detail. He had music. He's getting new music. I couldn't tell if this was new music. It almost sounded new. I don't know if this was the debut of his new music or not, but he had music tonight. Once he walked out, they then started the music once he was already on stage. So this was Wardlow's first match since beating MJF, his first match officially as a member of the AEW roster under AEW contract and not under contract to MJF. He destroyed J.D. Drake. I almost said J.D. from New York. He destroyed him too. He destroyed J.D. Drake here in this match, put him away with two power bombs, which might have been the fewest number of power bombs I've seen him dole out to anybody in a very long time. It was kind of disappointing. But I guess he kind of exhausted himself on Sunday, right? He gave 10 of them to MJF, so we only got two of them tonight. Tony Schiavone got into the ring to interview Wardlow, and as is the case, it is an AEW tradition that you cannot say a fucking word in this company without being interrupted. And so before he could really say anything, here comes smart Mark Sterling with his army of security geeks. He's got a neck brace on, and he's coming down the ramp. And he had one of his security people serve Wardlow in the ring with papers. And this was papers, we were told, for a class action lawsuit on behalf of the American Arena Security Professionals, the AASP. I don't know if that is a legitimate group or not. Maybe it is. Maybe it's a legitimate group. But he was serving him papers on behalf of that organization for all of the security geeks that Wardlow has been killing now for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks on television. All the security guys that he has thrown around and powerbombed and beat up and launched in the air. This was a class action lawsuit on their behalf. The security guard went to go leave. Wardlow grabbed him, and he powerbombed him, tore up the papers, and then he shoved them in the guard's mouth. So I kind of got a kick out of it, but I guess my fear now with Wardlow, they need to make sure they have something lined up for him to do. And I don't know what that's going to end up being. I'm curious to see where they go with him now. Because everything was built around this feud with MJF and breaking free from the contract that he had with MJF. And I use the analogy sometimes, and I think it's appropriate here. It's like the dog who eventually catches up with the car. The dog chases the car and chases and chases, and then when the dog catches the car, it doesn't know what to do with it. Well, now that they've exhausted the story with him and MJF, and he won, he beat him, he broke free of the contract. Now what? He's not challenging for the world title. That's accounted for right now. So what do you do with Wardlow? Does he go after the TNT title? It might make more sense for him to go after it than Miro. Miro just came back. Miro's a heel, I think, still. Scorpio Sky is a heel. Maybe Wardlow goes after the TNT title. That's probably the direction I would start going in. Eventually, you're going to have to get that championship off Scorpio Sky. Have they given thought to who that's going to be? Wardlow should be in the conversation. Otherwise, you run the risk of him becoming the next Lance Archer, where he just sort of fades into the background and we barely get to see him. I mean, hell, it wasn't lost on me, even though I really liked the show tonight, that there was no House of Black. There was no Malakai Black on the show tonight. Now, that was because they already had enough people on the show I know you can't fit them all on there every week, but that's been my biggest issue with him and the House of Black. They don't get featured enough. They didn't have them on the show tonight. They may not have them on the show next week either. They've got to make sure they find a way to keep the momentum going with Wardlow and not cool him off too much. I think there's going to be a natural cooling that happens because he's not one of the main focal points of the show going after the world title. The TNT title is something he can absolutely go after. I don't know where he is in the rankings right now, but that's probably the school of thought I would go with. Start building him up in that direction. But you don't want to cool him off too much. You know, he's naturally over. The people like him. But he can get cold in an instant if they make the wrong move with him. Speaking of the TNT title, we had that up next. We had Scorpio Sky, Ethan Page, and Dan Lambert interviewed backstage by Lexi Nair. Very stormy in New York tonight. I don't know if earlier the rain and the thunder, holy shit, it was coming through this way, probably on the mic. Looks like it's finally dying down a little bit. The heavens opened up. It was like a deluge outside. I was worried that my internet was going to go out, but I think for the most part, it's held up pretty well. I'm actually kind of impressed. Usually in the past, when we have a storm like that, it doesn't work out so well. But so far, so good. Hopefully, I didn't just jinx it. But Men of the Year were in the back with Lexi Nair. And she noted that Scorpio Sky is going to defend his TNT title against Dante Martin on Rampage on Friday, which I do believe is a live show. I think they're in Ontario, California. I think they're doing another live show from California on Friday. So Scorpio Sky, he went to go snap his fingers to end the segment. And all of a sudden, here comes Dante Martin. And Dante Martin didn't have a whole lot to say, but what he did say wasn't very good. This was not very good. This was not his strongest promo. This was not the strongest work here from young Dante, but thankfully they kept it short and he didn't have a whole lot to say. He'll do his talking in the ring. He'll do much better in the ring than he did on the mic here tonight. So then we had Toni Storm and Ruby Soho against Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. Storm and Baker started things off. Boy, a lot of people. Very upset that Britt Baker went over Ruby Soho in that tournament on Sunday. And I was one of the people who said that Britt Baker did not have to win that tournament. I mean, it really was unnecessary to put her over in the end. I would have had Statlander win the tournament personally and then go after the TBS title. But then, you know, came down to Baker and Ruby, and I just figured, well, Baker's probably going to get the win. And sure enough, that's what happened here. But I think they kind of tried to make up for that here with the finish on this show tonight. Toni and Britt started things out, and I thought Toni Storm looked good. She always looks good, but I thought Toni Storm looked good in this match tonight. She was a house of fire. She forced Britt Baker to tag out to Jamie Hayter. Ruby tagged in. Britt gave her a neck breaker on the floor ahead of the commercial break. Ruby hit a back suplex, she reached Toni Storm for the hot tag. She ran wild on both Hayter and Baker until Hayter countered a tornado DDT with a DDT of her own on the floor. That looked pretty brutal. Ruby took out Jamie Hayter with a diving crossbody, and then Britt Baker came in with a sling blade on Ruby. Back inside, Ruby hit the no future kick for a near fall. Britt hung on after the kick out, though. And she put the glove on, the latex glove, setting up for lockjaw. She tried to cradle out of it, but there was an assist here from Jamie Hayter that gave Britt a cradle attempt of her own for a near fall. Baker hit a swinging neck breaker on Ruby. There was a miscommunication between Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter that led to Ruby hitting Destination Unknown for the win. So Ruby got a win over Britt Baker. It wasn't the win that I think a lot of people were hoping that she would get for the Owen on Sunday, but she did get the win here in this match. And after the match, Jamie Hayter attacked Ruby with the Owen Hart championship belt that Britt did carry with her to the ring. And shout out to Belt Fan Dan. I mentioned this on Twitter. He played a role in the production of that belt. And that championship, not only that one, but the one that was presented to Adam Cole as well, I think turned out looking tremendous. I think those belts look great. And, you know, it's weird because sometimes, you know, you see a belt and it's too busy, or, you know, it's just like, it just looks weird or something, and they're trying something different with it. This just looks like kind of like an old school classy championship. And apparently it was modeled after, I think, one of the old Stampede wrestling belts, if I'm not mistaken, which makes a lot of sense. But I just thought the design of it, the colors and the tooling and everything. I mean, I'm a belt mark, as you could tell. I mean, so says the guy with two belts on the wall over his shoulder here. I think they look tremendous. So I just want to give him another shout out. And really, anybody who was involved in that whole production and presentation of the Owen thing overall, including Tony Khan. I thought it was a very cool thing for them to do, to pay, you know, homage to somebody who, you know, to see fans online who are in their teens, they wouldn't have known Owen from fucking Adam. You know, they weren't even alive when he died, let alone when he wrestled. And there are people now who know who he is, you know, because of this stuff. And he's going to be in the video game, and it's just cool. You know, it's cool to see him represented again. Obviously, Martha did not want to work with WWE, which, completely understand why. But, you know, that Tony Khan opened up communication and said, hey, you know, why don't we do something here? And then to honor him at all, I just thought it was a very cool thing. And I do hope it becomes an annual thing that they can do. You know, some of the matches in the tournaments I wasn't really thrilled with. I just thought it was, I don't know. The tournaments, I thought, in some of those rounds, I mean, they you know, it could have been better. But overall, I think that it was very cool what they did. So, anyway, we'll see if they're going to continue things with Britt Baker and Ruby Soho, or, based on this finish here, are they going to transition into something with Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker? Well, some tension in the ranks. It's been teased before. They got away from it, but it's not like they haven't dropped teases of this months ago of possible cracks in the alliance here with Baker and Hayter. And then we had Jon Moxley against Daniel Garcia. Main event, Garcia strikes again. How many times have we seen this kid in the main event on these shows over all these months? Even before he linked up with Jericho. How many main events did Daniel Garcia have on Dynamite and Rampage? Probably more than I can fit on two hands. He got another one tonight against Jon Moxley. You think they see something in this kid? So ahead of the final break, Garcia opened up the stitches in Moxley's head from the match on Sunday. After they came back from the break, Moxley was just a bloody fucking mess. So before the break, he had just been opened up. He had some blood on the forehead. They come back, his whole face is just covered in crimson. Moxley hit a brutal looking X-plex to Daniel Garcia on the floor. The ring steps were positioned right by them. He suplexed him up. He let him go. And it looked like he almost completely missed the steps. I think he may have gotten the jagged edge on the way down. Or he clipped the steps. Garcia did. But that did not look like it would be fun to take. Back in the ring, Moxley hit a superplex into the hammer and anvil elbows. Garcia, though, reversed. Moxley regained control, although only briefly. Garcia locked on a submission, but Moxley got to the ropes. Mox hit a backdrop driver. Garcia immediately popped up, fired up, hit one of his own, and then hit a pile driver for two. Garcia locked on a modified version of the sharpshooter, and Moxley was able to reach back and counter out of it into a bulldog choke, which Garcia slipped out of. They ended up back on the floor. Garcia jumped on Moxley's back, and Moxley he ran and just fell backwards on top of the timekeeper's table, but not with enough momentum to break it. Instead, the table kind of just keeled over. At that point, Chris Jericho, who was doing commentary and arguing the whole time with William Regal, he got off headset. He ran down to the ring to interfere. Here comes Eddie Kingston, though. And Eddie Kingston comes running down to the ring after him. And if you go back and watch, Eddie Kingston, he lost his balance. Now, he never fell. He somehow managed to stay upright, but he tripped a little bit. He was going forward. But he somehow managed to... Now, they did cut away briefly. Maybe he did fall and he got back up, but I didn't see him fall. But he could have taken a face plant, and he didn't. He tried not to fall down. And then eventually he made it over to Jericho and tackled him to the ground and was beating him up. Meanwhile, in the ring, Moxley hit the paradigm shift to Garcia into the Bulldog choke, and John Moxley wins the match. So after the match, Eddie Kingston gets in the ring. Moxley has the mic. And Moxley says he wants in on this Blood and Guts match. So I guess they're going to go one by one. Each person is going to have to declare themselves, I guess, for this match. So officially, John Moxley and Eddie Kingston so far are in the Blood and Guts match. That's going to be on Dynamite June 29th in Detroit. That is the first Dynamite after the Forbidden Door show. And that closed out the show tonight. Next week, it's Hangman Page one-on-one with David Finlay of New Japan. And like I said, Jericho against Ortiz, hair versus hair. Road Rager episode of Dynamite. Not next week, but the week after, despite the graphic saying July 15th. It is not July 15th. It is June 15th. That match will take place on Dynamite. This was one of the best Dynamites that I have watched. It felt like an event. It felt like there were some big things happening. That first hour was better than hour two. Hour two kind of brought things down a little bit. It was like the come down hour. It wasn't bad, but it was just the come down hour. It wasn't as fast paced or it didn't have the same energy hour one did. But it's the kind of show where, you know, it felt like there were a lot of things going on from, you know, the Forbidden Door stuff with Punk, Tanahashi coming out, obviously the MJF promo. We had some returns and some debuts on the show. Miro is back, and Athena made her first appearance. And if you're into the in-ring, you had plenty of that, too. You had that wild, insane 10-man tag team match. And also a pretty good main event, not for nothing, you know, between Daniel Garcia and Jon Moxley. I thought they had a fine match. So this was an excellent episode of Dynamite. This is what you guys think of the show so far. 91% thumbs up, 5% thumbs in the middle, and just 4% thumbs down. An overwhelmingly positive reaction to Dynamite tonight. Not surprising. It was an excellent show. It was their Raw after WrestleMania, back when that actually still meant something. There hasn't been a really fun Raw after WrestleMania in several years, but there was a time when WrestleMania would end, and whether it was a good WrestleMania or a bad WrestleMania, you knew that some shit was going to go down the very next night. You were going to have a return, or you were going to have a debut, maybe you'd have a title change, something was going to happen. Money in the bank, cash in, right? Something. And this was, I think, to AEW what that was to, at one time, was to WWE. It's a big night for them. And we'll see where things go now heading into Forbidden Door with the other big names. We know Tanahashi is accounted for, but we don't know what Okada is doing. We don't know what Will Ospreay is doing. We don't know what Naito, who I think should be back in time for that show. I know he had eye surgery not too long ago, but he should be on that show. Suzuki, Ishii, I mean, Ibushi won't be there. I don't think Ibushi or Omega will be there, but I am looking forward to the Forbidden Door. Now we go to the Forbidden Super Chats. Now I get to hear from you guys. I turn the show over to you guys. I know you've got a lot of questions and comments about this show tonight. Maybe some other things as well sprinkled in. I want to thank everybody who has sent in a Super Chat so far. Well, we got a lot of them here. We got a lot of them to get through. Where are we, by the way, on the likes? Oh, we did it. Look at that. We fucking slammed through 500. We're approaching 700. See if we could do 750. 750 would make me happy. So hit that like button. Hey, Yukio rules. Dropping $25 before we even went live tonight. Going to the show live and looking forward to coming here to listen to your review. Keep up the great work. So he was in the building tonight. He was at the forum. We're going to have to get the scoop from him when he gets back from the show on how the experience was. Joseph Brooks, years ago, WWE had their list of top five dream matches. Do you agree with the matches on that list. Stone Cold Steve Austin against Hulk Hogan. The Rock against Shawn Michaels. Sting against The Undertaker. Bret Hart against Kurt Angle. And LOD against the Dudleys. I agree with the first four. I would not have LOD and Dudleys on my list. I would replace that with Brock Lesnar and Vader. That is a match I would have loved to have seen. Nayef Alsafar, thank you for the $3.99. And Food Hive, main event Garcia strikes again. Indeed. And thank you, by the way, to the, we got a couple of new channel members tonight who signed up as well. So thank you to you guys as well. If people in the chat want me to put my hair on the line, hair versus hair, no. I would look good bald, about as good as Chris Jericho would. If that ever happened, you would see me on the stream here. I'd be like Kurt Angle in 2002, wearing the amateur headgear with the wig underneath. That would be me. Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury, $5 super chat. Tonight, MJF dropped the second biggest bomb of the past 5 years. First one still goes to Amber Heard. My goodness. Rye Baker, a channel member for the last 5 months. Do I think any more matches will be added to the Hell in a Cell card? They have to be. There is not a single SmackDown match on the pay-per-view on Sunday. This is a Raw pay-per-view right now. So, yes, they have to add something. I would throw Walter and Ricochet on there. Just belt them already. Put the Intercontinental title on Walter on Sunday. But yes, I would expect that there will be at least one, if not two, SmackDown matches added to the show. Dried chicken without flavor. Tonight, I am declaring that I am Team New Japan. I'm on New Japan's side on the road to Forbidden Door. Yes, everybody in the chat should declare their allegiance here. Are you Team AEW, or are you Team New Japan, or are you Team Sound Off? There's only one correct answer to this question, so I expect you to answer correctly. Food Hive, MJF could never cut a promo like that in WWE. Well, that's one of those things he's got to think about long and hard before he goes there. You know, does he want to play a toned-down, kind of watered-down version of MJF, or does he want to keep doing what he's doing in AEW? I'd like to see MJF stay exactly the way he is now. And what you saw from him tonight, he could never be that in WWE. He could pull off a toned-down version, but the version of him that you saw tonight, you would never see that there. Dried chicken, Ghetto is a better booker than Tony Khan. # Team New Japan. Dried chicken says Zack Sabre Jr. is a better technical wrestler than Bryan Danielson. Food Hive, I'm calling it now. Main event Daniel Garcia is going to turn on the Jericho Appreciation Society during Blood and Guts to join the Blackpool Combat Club. Start the slow turn now. I don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen. Nick Grosso, great promo by MJF. I wonder how much was real and where was Thunder Rosa? No women's champion at all. Britt Baker is their Charlotte Flair now. You know, that's a very good point. There was no Thunder Rosa on the show, and I don't know if there was a reason for that. I don't think she's hurt. She's your AEW women's champion. How come we have the TBS champion on the show? And we don't have the AEW world women's champion. How come she's not on the show? She had a very good match with Serena Deeb on Sunday, picked up a big win in that match. Wasn't even represented on the show tonight at all. So unless there was a specific reason why she could not be there that we're just not aware of, she should have been on the show. Absolutely. We've got dried chicken. This chicken here is getting spicy. House of Torture are a better group than House of Black. Malakai Black is all smoke but no fire. One and only with the $5 super chat. If the MJF promo was a work, do you think they gave him his own pipe bomb to build to the match with CM Punk for the title down the line? I said tonight was the start of the eventual... Well, not even the eventual journey. This is part of the journey. The eventual match with Punk, the journey to that match began tonight. So, yes, I think that is part of the plan. Quintus Brown, great Dynamite tonight. I wish Tony Khan had a media scrum after Dynamite. MJF beats Punk it all out. It has to be done. Epsilon Sama, after that shoot promo Max did, will he get fired? No. Darlene, tonight's show felt like old Dynamite. Fantastic. I agree. Drew Johnson, Cody goes to WWE to fight Seth Rollins 3 times. LOL, Cody will be regretting his decision. I don't think he will. I think Cody will be WWE champion inside of a year. And I think that's what he wants. I think it means it's more than a storyline for him. I think it means a lot to him to hold the title that in his mind he feels his father was robbed of. I think that that's going to mean a lot more to him than most people might think. It's inevitable. He's going to become WWE champion. So I don't think he regrets that decision at all. Look at the way he's been booked. Look at the way he's been positioned so far. They've taken Roman Reigns off some of the posters and put him on there. I don't think he's regretting anything right now. Marcus Robinson Johnson. Oh, wait, Piero. We forgot Piero. Piero Beetle says, the MJF think was not good. The MJF think. Is that like Mr. Stink? All right, well, Piero was not a fan of the MJF promo tonight. Marcus Robinson Johnson heading to Hawaii tomorrow, so I'll probably miss the Friday stream. Great show tonight, Tanahashi against Punk soon, and MJF's promo. Jacob Donnelly, $5 super chat. Is the loose cannon MJF appropriate? Now, the loose cannon belongs to Brian Pillman. We don't need to be stealing other people's names. MJF, he doesn't need a nickname. He's too good for a nickname. Rodimus Prime, $20. I was looking at something else. $20 super chat. What is wrong with me? Punk against Tanahashi. Sign me up. That said, the stuff with MJF and AEW is definitely real. Maxwell showed out tonight. Yeah, that fire that was coming through in that promo, I'm telling you, that comes from a place of real frustration. He is channeling that now into the storyline, which is a brilliant thing to do. And hopefully it means that the ice has thawed a little bit between him and Tony Khan so that we don't have to, you know, for the next 12 to 18 months, hear about constant issues between the two of them. Take those very real emotions and channel them into this story. It's the best way to go with this. Old Dirty Sausage, $5 super chat. This is when wrestling is at its best. The blend between kayfabe and reality. Tony better pay MJF millions after that promo. Well, he will if he extends his contract. I'm sure he will pay him a lot more than what he's being paid now. We've got Andrew Jorlog with the 1992 Royal Rumble Super Chat. This Dynamite reminded me of those 1997 Nitro episodes and 1999 Raw episodes where everything clicked. Excellent. And that promo was Punk Pipe Bomb. Dusty Rhodes Hard Times level amazing. Luis Belmont Show, $5 super chat. MJF is a crybaby. I love it. Well, Luis has spoken. 2EX98, if MJF wins, I could see Eddie Kingston being next. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people seem to think that Eddie Kingston is going to become the AEW World Champion at some point. And I think that, you know, it would make for a great story. But I just don't see it. I don't see it. Now, Eddie winning the TNT title, that I could see. Eddie on the mic is absolutely world title material. But do I see him winning the championship? I just don't see. I don't think he fits in there. I don't think so. Tetsuya Ito. Please uncuff Jamie Hayter and let her loose already. She's twice as good as most even now. Red Emissary, she is very good. Red Emissary of Darkness just got an idea. MJF starts a civil war between AEW originals and ex-WWE wrestlers as a babyface, leading to MJF beating heel Punk as the climax. So that is an interesting idea. So his idea is, we end up, I guess, with what? Punk and Danielson and Jericho and Moxley and them sort of on the same side against the MJFs and the Wardlows and Darby, maybe Sammy. It's almost like a New Blood Millionaires Club type idea from WCW. I mean, look, it could work. I think in the right circumstance, that could be a fun story to follow. Rizzo, $20 super chat drop. Rizzo, my God, what's going on, Rizzo? As someone who isn't a huge fan of AEW and had to work today, I saw on Twitter the MJF promo, and oh my, that got my attention. Hope you all had a good day. You sound like Michael Cole now, rubbing off with that oh my, oh my. Oh my. Devin Garcia, we need to see a promo battle between MJF and Eddie Kingston. Pro Wrestling Fan 486. Oh, it's the Iowan Corn Farmer. What's going on? Hopefully CM Punk's reign is booked better than Hangman's. I predict MJF will be the one to take it from him whenever he finally drops it. Ghostros, what's your favorite wrestling memory? Oh, I've got a lot of wrestling memories. I don't know if I could just pick one. I have great memories from being at shows, and I have great memories from watching them on TV. I don't think I can narrow it down to just one. I think that's an impossible question to answer on. You put me on the spot like this. I've got too many to name. I've got too many of them to name. You know, my favorite WrestleMania match of all time is Michaels and Undertaker at WrestleMania 25. I remember the feeling of, you know, watching that match. When it was over, it was this, you know, great feeling. But being in the building when Daniel Bryan won the championship at WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans, that was a great memory too. Watching Rock and Hogan at WrestleMania 18, albeit from home, I wasn't there, but that was a fun moment too. I mean, I could go down the list. David Hart, 1999, Super Chat. There's footage on Twitter of CM Punk coming down to the ring after they cut to the commercial during MJF's segment, which led to MJF leaving. I'll be curious how they add Punk to this story whenever that time comes. Yeah, I mentioned that earlier. I saw that same clip. And MJF bailed through the crowd out of the arena. Luis, the forum wasn't completely sold out. There were patches of up to 6 seats per row. Well, fucking damn it, there you go. Luis has spoken, everybody. Luis has spoken. Luis the usher, he was at the building tonight, and he could see all the different patches of empty seats in the building. Off Leather Wings, I'm a ref and working a Survivor Series-like show this month. Recommend me some elimination tags to watch. Austin vs. Bischoff is already on my list. That was probably the first one I was going to name from 2003. I was always a fan of, and I, you know, it wasn't in the ring anything special, but I was always a fan of the wild card match they did at the 95 Survivor Series, which was just a mix of heels and baby faces, you know, tagging together. In terms of Survivor Series matches, that was always a favorite of mine. I mean, thinking of specifically Survivor Series matches, you can't really go wrong if you go back and watch the show from 89, 89 and 90. Have some of my favorite Survivors matches. I know they got away from the stipulation in later years. Honestly, there isn't a Survivor Series match post-03 that really stands out to me too much. I feel like there was a really good one in 2014 or 2016. I want to say Roman Reigns was involved in it. I don't remember which year it was. I wish I had a longer list for you, but those will give you a few to add to the list in terms of elimination matches. 03 is really held up there, though, as one of the better ones. And the story they told, and Michael's bleeding, and, you know, that was a very good one. You'll have to let me know what show that's on, that you're going to be officiating. Dry chicken without flavor. Even though I am Team New Japan, I loved MJF's promo tonight. It won't surprise if any wrestlers backstage slowly sided with MJF after that promo. Aunt Peggy McDonald, thank you for the dollar. Lakers Pats, buy or sell HBK's ref gear or Vince McMahon's Over the Edge 98 ref gear. Yeah, where he wore the shirt that Mick Foley said he looked like he bummed it off a kid. I'm going to go with Vince. I don't need to be remembering Shawn Michaels' biker shorts. Groovy Goose, I've said before, MJF could do a double turn, but just needed the right guy. Perhaps Tony Khan assists Punk in the feud for the title to play into the ex-WWE bias. ZBird85, MJF needs to legitimately buy a skybox at Raw or SmackDown. I don't think that would be a very good idea. I don't think Tony Khan would like that very much. Ace of Masta with the $9.99. Not sure if they showed this on TV, but after MJF's promo, there's Jericho to cover up my super chat. Hey, Vishal Bhandari, just subscribe to the channel. What is up, Vishal? Chris Jericho has disappeared, so I will resume reading your super chat. He's also talking about Punk walking out to confront MJF. Excellent show, and hope they come back here soon again. I do, too. I thought that the crowd at the Forum was great tonight. But again, first time in California. You know, you have a lot of AEW fans out there who have been waiting a very long time. Were it not for the pandemic, they would have been out there a lot sooner. So they've been waiting and waiting. It's like those fans that are buying up the tickets to the Clash at the Castle show in the UK. First major stadium show in 30 years. There's a lot of pent-up demand for tickets, and there's a lot of pent-up demand for a big show. And so I'm sure when they get to that show in September, the crowd's going to be insane. They've been waiting a long time for that. Andy Jonathan, $4.99. Only way that MJF promos could have been better is if they smash cut to a Discovery executive in a luxury box doing a spit take with a glass of champagne. So you got like the CEO of Warner spitting out his Manischewitz all over the place. Manischewitz would be very appropriate for, you know, during the MJF segment. Dev to Dust, Blade Runner is a great film. Rest in peace, Ray Liotta. Derek Kane, gotta be honest, Dynamite needs more Malachi. Love the stream, brother. I agree. We need more Malachi Black. Yeah, I don't even think they mentioned, did they even air a video or mention anything about the Death Triangle, House of Black stuff and the Julia Hart turn? I don't think they did. Turtlehead 2, was MJF no-selling 10 power bombs? Maybe there's some truth to this after all. What about a double turn when MJF and Punk go at it again? Yeah, I talked about that earlier on the stream. I don't think MJF needs to go full babyface, but could there be a double turn where Punk becomes more of a heel? Yes. And that's what would differentiate this from the Punk and John Cena stuff that WWE did all those years ago. Instead of it being a, you know, kind of a copy of that, they could take it all the way and have the babyface champion end up going heel in the end, which is not what WWE did with Cena. First timer, $5 super chat. My favorite thing about these super chats is when Solomonster reads them, says nothing, and then moves on to the next one. Well, if you would have told me that before, I would have done that with yours. But thank you for the $5. Angel Silva, $4.99, had a fun ass time tonight at the Kia Forum. Big pops for Jericho, Mox, Eddie Regal, Lucha House Party. But by far, the most huge pop was for Punk and MJF. I said Lucha House Party. Jesus Christ. What is the LHP? I think he meant Lucha Bros, says Mr. Dynamite. Maybe. I don't know. I see LHP. I think of Lucha House Party. But thank you, Angel. Nicholas Jacobs, you might disagree, but MJF's character, in my opinion, is very reminiscent of a prime Shane Douglas, especially the way that he cuts promos. I see a little bit of Shane Douglas in it. A little bit. Quintus Brown, when Scorpio Sky goes to sleep at night, does he dream of Jeannie? I think the spirit of Paul Heyman has taken over your soul. Where's he at? I don't see Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman's not here tonight. I don't know if Paul Heyman's a... Well, Paul Heyman would join us on SmackDown, of course. I don't know that Paul Heyman is an AEW guy. Where the fuck I am with the $9.99 Super Chat. Hey, Solo, remember a while back when I told you that we may be getting a huge opportunity on the upcoming AEW LA show? Well, it happened. I'll let you guess which segment we were in. Oh, you know, I had forgotten about that. That's right. That's right. Well, congrats. That's awesome. And I do. I do indeed know what segment that you are referring to. That is awesome. I'm really glad to hear that. I'm sure that was a trip. Nash DTV, wow, that MJF promo was fire. And to be honest, I don't know what's real and what's a work at this point. Well, that means they got you. That means it's working. I think of that Hogan tweet. Good night, all the jabroni marks who work themselves. Or how does it go again? I always get it jumbled up. Who work a work when you work a work or something like that. Lord Frieza, wow, even evil space tyrants get worked. Tremendous promo by MJF. Stay safe. Dry Chicken says, hashtag free private party. Quintus Brown, buy or sell on the better promo, CM Punk Pipe Bomb or Ric Flair on Nitro for the Horseman reunion. Also, do you feel MJF's promo tops both of them? I mean, both of them are similar in that they're rooted in something very real emotions. Flair was no fan of Eric Bischoff at that time. And that was a very emotional promo for him, for obvious reasons, after being put through the ringer by WCW for many months. Probably never thought he would be back. I mean, that's a memorable one. I think just because of the impact it had on Punk's career, you got to go with the pipe bomb in 2011. That was a more impactful promo. Did MJF's promo top them both? It's so fresh in my mind, it's almost unfair to even judge. You know, that's the sort of question I think you ask 6 months from now. It was great. It was a great promo. I don't really want to rank tonight's promo against them, though. Food Hive, CM Punk looks like season 6 Rick Grimes. Well, I mean, maybe that means he's going to be written off the show soon. He slips up on any more of those springboards and he might be. Cassio Black, $10 super chat. I just don't get why Malachi doesn't get more love. House of Black, well, you gotta listen to me. I give him love every week. Come on now. The House of Black killed it at Double or Nothing, and yet no follow-up tonight. If Malachi doesn't get a shot at Punk at some point, it is a damn shame. I think that would be a fantastic idea. And I think that Punk and Malachi is a feud that should happen. But they don't seem to be all that interested in using him as a single anymore. That was one of my biggest fears when they formed this group, is that he just becomes a group guy and a tag team guy and a trios guy. And they might even win the trios titles, but Malachi should also be doing some single stuff. And the person in the chat who asked about the Eric Bischoff clip, Eric Bischoff is an idiot. Isn't that the clip at the beginning of the podcast? Yes, it is. You're referring to the Bret Hart clip of him calling Eric Bischoff an idiot. I play that at the beginning of every podcast because it is true. Yukio Rules back from the show, and it was great. Loved it, and I hope they come back again. MJF went off in there. He called his boss a fucking mark. I mean, how many guys do you think would love to go on TV and call their boss a fucking mark? Instant Classic, thank you for the $1.99. Temujin Zephyr, $9.99. Wonderful Dynamite episode. Rangers win game one at Madison Square Garden. And Amber Heard took a loss. Talk about a wonderful day, he says. Also, what if Naito makes an appearance with Rush and Andrade at Forbidden Door? I think that would be very cool. We've got Luis. Luis is showing the love tonight. I'm feeling the love from Luis. Upon reviewing the live feed of Dynamite and DVR through Sling TV, and TBS and AEW did censor the last few seconds of the MJF promo on TV. CM Punk running out to shut MJF up happened during the commercial break. Well, we have breaking news here from Luis telling us that they censored the end of the MJF promo on TV. Well, I mean, I don't think that we knew that. Well, now we do. Now apparently we know. I don't have Sling TV, though. I watch through YouTube TV. But on Fight TV internationally, there was no censoring. Oh, here comes the Solo Monster attacking Hulk Hogan, one of my favorite super chats. Beat the fuck out of him, you orange goblin. Man, I'm really laying those shots in. That reminds me, I gotta get to the next Sound of Gamer. I'm hoping in the next few days I can record My Rise episode 6. We gotta continue on the Solo Monster's journey. Temujin Zephyr, where does Hangman go from here? Heel turn. I don't know what they plan for him, but we know he's facing David Finlay next week. And I hope they have a big match set up for him for Forbidden Door. I mean, he shouldn't be left off that show. I could see him potentially maybe even being linked back up with the Bucks or something. You know, maybe they do some kind of a six-man tag, you know, with the elite guys or the former elite guys. You know, where he goes from here, I don't see him getting the belt back anytime soon. A heel turn, he's still very over as a babyface. But the way he was acting going into Double or Nothing would lead you to believe that maybe there's a heel turn in mind for him. I think we're not going to know until we see how he acts when he walks out on TV next week. If he walks out next week and he's like the old Hangman before the Punk feud, then he's not going heel. But if he comes out and he's got more of a mean streak to him, or you know, the big crazy eyes like he had at the pay-per-view, then you know, maybe they're going to, you know, push him more towards the heel role. I'm just looking at the layout of the roster right now. Would it be better for him to be a face or a heel? Just given who they have on the roster, who there is for him to feud with and work with. You know, it might be better for him to go heel, to be honest with you. I mean, he'll have plenty of people to work with in that situation. But I don't know. I don't know what Tony Khan has in the cards for him. We're going to find out next week. We're getting the drunk, depressed cowboy again. Yeah, but then you're just going back to the same thing that you already did. I don't think that that's what they need to be doing. Luis just tweeted to you the proof that Dynamite was not sold out. Boy, you really hung up on this idea that Dynamite wasn't sold out. I mean, it's not a big deal. Well, I haven't seen the tweet. I will have to check it out when we're done here. Amiibo Guru. Great show tonight. Wardlow's record should have reset since he is now signed. Make him undefeated unless you believe that is a carbon copy of Goldberg. Yukio rules with the $5 super chat. Need more Jamie Hayter on my TV. Yeah, I agree with Mr. Dynamite. One thing I think we can all agree with is that Hangman should not go back to just hanging out with the Dark Order on TV. That is one thing that he should not be doing. Bones Jones. I was there, fun show, but was cursed. No Danhausen. That's right, no Hook and no Danhausen tonight. I feel like most of Hook's appearances, though, have been reserved for Rampage, so my guess would be we'll get Hookhausen on Friday. King Bling Blah, Punk and Cena Money in the Bank storyline type. have Punk try to tell MJF about going to WWE and tell MJF he doesn't know what it's like. MJF says, look at Cody. Well, I mean, they're not going to jump right into Punk and MJF right away. I mean, I hope nobody is expecting this to happen on next week's show. Rizzo, sometimes when I'm watching you read these chats and talk about Raw, I feel in your head you are thinking, what the fuck did I do to deserve this? Good night, friends. How did you get into my head? Thank you, Rizzo. Bryant Finley, what did you think Khan is planning for Tony Storm? Well, Thunder Rosa was not on the show tonight. I would love to see Tony Storm challenging for the Women's Championship. That's what I would like to see. Now, she may have to win some matches. I know they have their rankings that they go by. But that's what I would be building towards. Tony Storm is great. Very marketable. Very good in the ring. I think her and Thunder Rosa could go in there and kill it. Groovy Goose, I respect you, Solo Man. I respect you too, Groovy Goose. Retro Unlimited 226 Super Chat, CM Punk's pipe bomb is similar to MJF's Target the Boss. Devin from NJ2000, buy or sell CM Punk calling MJF a less famous Miz, or Brandy calling Dan Lambert a less talented version of Paul Heyman. Oh, definitely a less famous Miz. Easily. Easily the better of the two lines. Thunder Knight, who becomes the first two-time AEW World Champion? Kenny Omega. And Corey Blake. MJF is pure gold. Tony Khan better pay that man. Also, how about those New York Mets? First place and kicking ass. Absolutely. One of the best teams in sports at the moment. My Mets are killing it, but I also, you know, as a Mets fan, as much as I want to jump for joy and I want to dance and I want to get excited and I want to sing meet the Mets, step right up and greet the Mets, I have to reserve myself. I have to calm myself down because I know that as soon as I let myself get too excited, I know the other shoe is going to drop. I don't want to jinx it. I don't want to curse it. It's only June. I've seen collapses before a lot later than June. But yes, the Mets are doing tremendously well right now. They are far and away ahead in the division right now. So, but it's still very early in the season. So, I see we have some fans of my Tony Storm Thunder Rosa idea in the chat. You like that, right? You like that. Yeah, so do I. That's why I pitched it. Anyway, thank you, Corey. I believe that we are now caught up on your super chats. Man, you guys came out in full force tonight. You guys fucking killed it. But we're not done yet. We got over 750 likes on this video. You guys smashed what I was hoping we would do. We'll do the rest of them on the replay. We usually get a whole bunch that come later on, but if we could hit 800 before we get out of here, that would be amazing. That would be tremendous. I don't think you guys have it in you, though. Yeah. I don't think you guys have it in you. I think you're tired. I think you're all out of energy. I don't think you have enough. I don't think you have enough in those thumbs to reach and hit that thumbs up. You could prove me wrong. And while you guys do that, it is time. It is that time. I did tell you at the beginning of the podcast, at the beginning of the stream here tonight, that we were going to be having the debut of a brand new part of Be the Booker. We got the men. We got the women. And tonight, it is the debut of the tag team version of Be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
Oh, indeed. I have been working my ass off to try to get this tag team Be the Booker done. You'd have no idea how time-consuming this thing is. I posted a little teaser screenshot of me working on it the other day on Twitter. That was just a small sample of some of the teams that are in this thing. So if you're new here, we do a little thing called Be the Booker here at the end. And we randomly book a men's main event, a women's main event, and starting tonight, a tag team match. I don't know if I'm going to do all three on every stream, but tonight we'll do all three. And we randomly book a match and see what we come up with and what kind of match would it be. Is it a good match? Is it a bad match? Am I a better booker than Tony Khan? Am I a better booker than Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard? I'd like to think so. So we're going to start tonight on the men's side of things. You know, Tony Khan and Ghetto are booking this Forbidden Door show. I can do a better job. We begin with broke-ass Baron Corbin. For the record, and by the way, you see a naked Solo Monster there on Corbin's face. Well, that sounded wrong, but you see the super chat on your screen is what I mean. That's from one of our gamer videos. Check out those Sound Dog Gamer videos. I got a whole bunch of them up. This right here, this was the best version of Baron Corbin. This is the version of Baron Corbin I actually miss. Bum-ass, broke-ass Baron Corbin is still the best Corbin. Let's see who his bum-ass is going to be stepping into the ring with. It'll be bum-ass Corbin going one-on-one with broken Matt Hardy. That is not a main event match. Broken Matt and basically broken Corbin. I mean, it kind of fits, but that's definitely not a main event match. I'm sorry. That don't work for me, brother. Let's try the ladies. See what we end up with here. We begin with Eva Marie. Instant fail. Easy on the eyes, but instant fail if I'm booking a main event on my show. I'll pick an opponent anyway, but I don't see what the purpose of it is. Eva Marie one-on-one against Natalya. In case I didn't make myself clear the first time. Instant fail. Can we bring back Corbin in Broken Matt? All right, well, it's time. It is time. We're going to take this thing for a spin. This is the very first time I'm using the machine. I hope it doesn't break down here. I'm taking this thing for a spin. We are going to pick a tag team match completely at random. Well over 150, actually almost 160 different teams here in this thing for those who are wondering. And the very first team that we fall on here. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, oh. My favorite team of all time. How about that? What are the fucking chances I land on these two? Axe and Smash, the former three-time WWE Tag Team Champions, Demolition. Demolition were my favorites growing up as a fan. I have a lot of fond memories of watching Demolition back in the day. Oh yeah, we're starting out hot here. Oh yeah. Let's see who Demolition is going to be stepping into. Whoever it is, I'm sure Demolition gets the win. So it's Demolition taking on RK-Bro. That's a hell of a match. The fuck is on Riddle's face? He looks French. Randy Orton and Matt Riddle taking on Demolition. You talk about one generation stepping into the ring with another. It's the golden era taking on the era of shit. I mean, what would you call this? I don't know what you would call this, but Demolition and RK-Bro. I think that would be a fun match. I think that would be, and I think that is a fine first choice here. for the very first installment, tag team installment of Be the Booker. We're going to have some fun with that one, I could tell. There are some very interesting combinations, very interesting teams that are part of the tag team Be the Booker, but I'm glad that it's finally completed and I can debut it for all of you here tonight. I couldn't find a better RK-Bro picture. What makes you think that's the only one? There might be some repeats in there. Let's see. We got Brian Finley. If it was Storm against Rosa, Storm should win the belt. Maybe so. Maybe she will. Carlos Naftali with the $4.99. I was there. And it was super packed, other than a handful of empty seats. That probably did not sell in the small market. Carlos also says, my apology, I meant second market, not small market. I was going to say, isn't that like in the LA area? I don't consider LA to be a small market. I know it's Inglewood, but isn't that like a suburb of LA? We call an LA small now. It's like calling New York City tiny. Doesn't make sense. Food Hive, you might get the last word. Landing on your favorite tag team is a Be the Booker curse as well. Yeah, like I said, we have about 160 different teams. There's a few repeats in there, just so I can get a couple of different pictures in for some of the bigger teams, but 160 or so teams in there. So we got a nice wide selection to choose from all eras, across different promotions. So we'll have some fun with that. Morfiend is, he's ready to send the Mets to the World Series, right? Well, right now, they're well on their way. They are well on their way. Let's check that poll one more time here. Still pretty solid, 90% thumbs up. Only 4% thumbs down, so get those votes in. Again, you can always vote in these polls on Twitter at Solomonster. That is my handle, at Solomonster. That is the place to go. So we had a pay-per-view on Sunday, and I realized that we have two more pay-per-views this weekend. There is an NXT In Your House show on Saturday night. I am not sure if I'm going live after that or if I'm just going to wait until the next day. I'm doing a podcast on Sunday, so right now I'm kind of torn. I mean, do people even care? Do people even want a live stream after NXT? Because I could go either way. I could go live on Saturday night, or I can save my recap for episode 759 on Sunday. But there is an NXT event on Peacock on Saturday night. And then Sunday is Hell in a Cell, which as of this moment is all Monday Night Raw matches. They are clearly going to have to add a couple of SmackDown matches on Friday. But right now, as of this moment, it is a Raw pay-per-view. And highlighted by Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins inside the cell. Which at least, you know, that's the closest thing that on either show that actually warrants the stipulation. You know, it's the 25th year anniversary, 25 years since the very first Hell in a Cell. You would think that they may have made a bigger deal about it this year, but they really haven't. They haven't. I don't even think they've mentioned it at all. It's a 25-year anniversary of Hell in a Cell, and it's just another show. But it was 25 years ago in October of 1997, the very first Hell in a Cell, and in my opinion, still the greatest. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. Kane made his debut that night as well. A very eventful night in WWE history. And it doesn't look like this Sunday is going to be very eventful, but I will be live no matter what. I will be live after Hell in a Cell on Sunday night. So I may or may not be live Saturday night, but I'll definitely be live on Sunday night. And before then, though, I'll be live on Friday night. So I hope you guys will come back on Friday night and join me for the SmackDown Rampage recap. Again, Rampage is a live show this week. It's always better when Rampage is live. Another California show. So I will be back with you then. And I think that pretty much covers everything. I do believe. This was a fun stream. Good stream tonight. Great Dynamite, a lot to unpack, especially with the MJF stuff, and I'm sure I will have more to say about that and all the other news of the week. on episode 759 this Sunday. So I'm going to let you guys go. You have yourselves a great night. Thank you again for the super chats and the new channel members, all the new subs, all the love tonight. And please do hit that like button on your way out. We're right around 800 likes, or just on the verge of 800 if we're not already there. And you guys have come out in full force, and I appreciate it. So, again, take care, and I'll see you back here live on Friday night for more Sound Off. I'll see you then.